Welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. This is part of our offer for our knowledge transfer network and the support that we offer for small businesses here at the University of Bradford. I'm delighted to be joined today by two great speakers, Daria Belsner. Daria is the Senior Director for Global Operations at Broadbean, a global HR tech firm focused on recruitment. She also runs her own coaching practice called Green Lights Coaching, and she's a graduate of the university, the MSc in Human Resource Management. Also really delighted to be joined online by Professor Cordula Barzatni. Cordula is Professor of International Intercultural Management and Co-Director of the Advanced Master in Air Transport Management at Toulouse Business School. So joining us from France today. And she's a long-standing member of the School of Management's International Advisory Board. So has a long-standing working relationship with us in terms of advising us and supporting us in that regard. And actually the first member of our international faculty and associations that we've had on one of these podcasts, Cordula. So it's great to kind of have you here. So thank you both for being here. As you know, we're going to talk about responsible management, and our particular focus today is around what the relationship is between responsible management and the leadership of an organisation. Perhaps start with then the obvious question, which is, what does responsible management mean for you? Daria, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So, yeah, I was thinking about the management and the leadership and the differences, because that's really something we need to define, right? And for me, responsible management is really the day-to-day, right? It is the management team. It's the vision that they have. I remember once one of my managers told me a really interesting thing. He said, it's the main difference between a leader and a manager is their vision. And managers usually think ahead for 1 to 2 years. This is their almost day to day, and leaders, they think 5 years ahead. And that's kind of a very simple way to put the differences, right? So for me, responsible management is, again, how do we bring that responsibility to our processes, our procedures, our people, but again, something that is more immediate rather than really kind of like this long term big vision and big thinking.
Brilliant. Thank you. Cordula.
Yes, I would fully agree with that. I see the responsible management as a criteria that goes beyond the normal, you know, looking for profit and making some profitability of any kind of business activity, which is rather short term. I would say that you have, while you are still getting your margins, you have some responsibilities to all your stakeholders. Mm-hmm. So you have more than the basic profit motivation if you are a responsible manager. So we are thinking, for instance, about sustainable development goals. Try to have the least impact on your environment, while still, of course, as a business organization, you need to at least meet the bottom line. And maybe as an academic, I may actually re-cherish what was already mentioned, that this short-termism is probably more the managerial part. Mm-hmm. We have a very famous article that was quite a time ago, published by Abraham Selesnik in 1977 in Harvard Business Review, where he talked about managers and leaders, are they different? And he stated already at that time that the managers are generally those who seek order, stability, control, and try to resolve problems rather quickly. And leaders, in contrast, are those who may tolerate, of course, chaos and lack of structure because they have that vision that was already mentioned. And I think also from the academic point of view, I think even if the article was written in 77, I think we still have a shared understanding about that differentiation between managers and leaders. And I suppose that in the business world, you need both profiles, of course. And it's not always the same that you have one person having both facets. Very often you may have actually leaders who are leaders only and managers who are managers only.
Yeah, and that I fully agree. And I think it's just this transition, right? Just like when you transition from being a someone's peer or individual contributor, and then people transition to being a manager. There's like this whole study about what that means and the skills and just really, you know, what they experience as well. And then you're absolutely right. Then there's next level. So when you become a leader rather than a manager. Yeah, so I couldn't agree more, and definitely seeing it in my day to day, you know, in my teams, where you almost sometimes want them to have this leader's vision because you feel like they may be ready for the next step. But yeah, it's sometimes the focus on the on the day-to-day, what's really in front of you. Because it's really sometimes firefighting, isn't it? Because it what comes, you need to deal with those things. Sometimes people don't even have time to actually sit down and think about 5 years. And if you, you know, as their manager, come to them and ask those questions, like, what about this? They're like, what do you mean? Because I, you know, here's my list for today, for this month. The world's on fire for me. So yeah, I really like that point.
I also think, I mean, for us in academia, that we also need your advice in terms of how to prepare future managers and future leaders. I think it's probably easier for us in academia for the structural part, management, we may better educate them. But what is actually your request for leadership? And can that actually be built? Or do you go later on in your professional environment and select those who are actually leaders, who will become leaders because they have that qualities that actually is standing out with this more, you know, creative and more visionary behavior?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be interesting for us as well in the academic world to know, can they really be trained and taught? Of course, we aspire to it.
Yeah.
We hope so. But it's not probably always evident really to get that selection, particularly if you mentioned this, you know, the routine day-to-day work is not necessarily always giving you the chance as well to go for more visionary activities.
I mean, it's a great challenge in some respects, isn't it? Because the skills and capabilities that make you an effective team member or an effective individual contributor are different to the ones you need when you move into a managerial role. And then how you develop out of that, maybe that first managerial role into senior roles, where you are responsible for vision and direction is a huge question, isn't it? And can we actually direct people? Train people. I'm trying to use the right language. I'm not sure what the right language is. I'm fairly confident it isn't teach people to be visionary, if that's what we're looking for.
No, I'm of course happy to share. And I think from personal experience and from also my coaching practice, what I would say is that it's actually on you as a leader to act by example and start early. I would say that starting early, just that conversation with your team. So let's say you have a team of 5 individual contributors, right? So of course, just like you're saying, some of them leaders, some of them managers, maybe some of them will actually want to stay where they are. So first, it's your responsibility to start those conversations with them. And I kind of, the way I approach it is very, very simple. I always tell them, like, kind of, what do you want to be when you grow up, like in your career aspirations? I'm not asking about like the 5-year plan, but you know, quite often when we start our careers, we're just saying, you know, I want to become this big director, or I want to become this like CEO. And I always love to have this conversation and be like, but as you go through your career, always have that check. Do you want to become a CEO, or is it just a beautifully sounding, cool term because, you know, it's the media and the pressure? But when you become a senior director, you start understanding that actually I'm starting to lose my work-life balance. I'm starting to lose that. Is it what I really, really want? So having that conversation from the early start to build that awareness in them, I think is a really important step one, you know, in this kind of like training and guiding. And I think, again, just for you to support them and creating those moments, those almost like islands of time when they can sit down and think about this future and they will be able to understand, is it what they want? So if they, let's say, set an hour every 2 weeks for their vision time, strategy time, it's like a mini practice of, here's your next step. Did you enjoy it? Or actually you were like, you know what, cannot think about this 5-year plan. I really want to go back. So I guess, I know I said a lot, but just to really kind of like sum up, I think it is about, it's our responsibility as leaders for our team who are, you know, growing those future managers and leaders to start very early, to almost give them a chance to be aware, maybe take some work away, you know, create that time. And then, of course, all the training and the skills, that's an integral part, of course. You know, we will need to provide certain trainings on certain topics that are related to leadership, but that I really see as step two.
Well, at least I would say in higher education, we are aiming at preparing them as well for a long professional life. And I think this responsibility that is probably also requested more and more, if you think about, you know, our young high school kids who did the Friday manifestations in many countries as well to go for more sustainability, for more, you know, taking into account climate change and things. I would say a leader now has to reply to far more constituents and parties than maybe in the past. So I would say that as well, this responsibility, which was also, of course, one area of our exchange here, is also an important part that has to be present as well. I think right from the training in our educational programs, but also make then apply responsible management and also responsible leadership in organizations. And that also means the leader has to lead the way to give the vision and also the mission of the company in order to comply with also responsibility. So I'm thinking about sustainable development goals as an example, but this is a very large 17-digit endeavor. So I was wondering how we actually, when we come out from this more educational, more maybe a general approach, how we really can as well support and see and encourage our leaders and also managers to really take it from the responsibility way, knowing that the routine and the bottom line requests sometimes are conflicting or crushing.
Yeah, and I think you just raised like this very challenging practical question, because the way people are is, unless it's like immediate crisis, they always think I can tackle it tomorrow, and then tomorrow it's something else. So it's always delayed. So we're immediately creating that danger of that never being addressed, and people perhaps never really getting to think about sustainability. Because what happened after the pandemic, it's just the world has changed, because everyone, every single company is doing layoffs, and there's just less and less people, but the amount of work has increased. So in my organization, the people who have left our organizations, friends, colleagues, everyone I'm speaking to, is they're saying, I'm doing five people's jobs right now. That's my day to day. So again, the challenge here, you know, to your point, if you want to apply it in this correct way of growing them, providing the opportunities, but also saying, you know what, you need to think about 20 things that are due today and about something in 5 years. It's just this, unfortunately, it will be human nature to try and say, don't give me that, right? But again, it's of course against their own growth and their own development. So I think right now, definitely for 2 or 3 years and already, you know, have past and future, is the challenge for the world of work. Definitely something that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. And I think that there's an interesting thing in the conversation so far about if we think about responsible leadership, about, you know, a big part of the conversation is about the responsibility we have for followers, for the people that we are responsible for. Yeah, and you've talked about self-awareness, and I think a big part of that is about giving space and time for reflection. We've talked indirectly about workload and kind of expectations in that regard, and how we allow people flexibility and time to be reflexive and to develop on that kind of basis. I wondered about that kind of piece about that, almost that relational role of leadership, which is a fairly trendy term at the moment, I think. Yeah, and sometimes gets put opposite a sort of visionary, charismatic type of leader. Yeah, so you're either, you know, the person that stood on top of the ramparts waving the flag and getting people to follow you, or you're working in relation with others. Yeah. I get the sense from the conversation we don't see that distinction. Is that fair?
Well, I think in my observations, working with students and also working with companies, I think Daria was mentioning this work-life balance issue. Mm-hmm. And today, since the workload post-pandemic has dramatically increased, and we also have a skill shortage and we have shortage of people, I would say that relational part is very important to convince people to stay in the job or to come and join certain companies. Because I also think, following what Daria was mentioning, there's a great resignation, and the great resignation is also a reply to, you know, this overuse and abuse of people, the overcharge, and not be willing actually to do this any longer and take charge of your own work and life, which I think is also a challenge. So I think companies have to become more attractive to take into account, to really think about the relationship with all their employees. Will they be leaders or followers at any level, I think? And one of the attractiveness arguments is certainly this idea of more responsibility. Have really a mission statement that takes into account, for instance, sustainability, taking charge of being good, good citizenship behavior. I think these are elements that also make the workplace more attractive. Otherwise, it will even get worse following a lot of reconsiderations by individuals. What's in for me if I'm in a workplace where actually I don't have a good relationship, for instance, with my manager or my leader, or I am actually not subscribing to the core objectives of my company if it's only profit maximization?
It's just like, because what you said provoked so many thoughts and what Cardullo said provoked so many thoughts, because you're absolutely right. With the Great Resignation, I think after when it all started, yeah, we definitely saw everyone was kind of like, I'm leaving because look, I can go there and get paid this. And again, after a year or so, people saw that it's actually different. Because so many companies that were hiring in like thousands of people, then they were laying off thousands of people. They also saw that they can't belong as well. Maybe the work-life balance is not there. Maybe the leader is not personable, you know, like Dave, to your point, when you said like this difference between this person who's just like, I'm here, kind of like my door is closed. If you want to speak to me, you know, make an appointment 20 days in advance, versus someone who's really, really personable, someone who's really, really leading by example and just making people feel like they are taken care of. Because I think still that's definitely what I'm seeing. With all this flux and all the change, especially after the pandemic, because everything was just like, our world was not our world anymore, right? And we need this certainty that we just need to know that things will be how we know them. And having a leader who provides that almost comfort, and at the same time, of course, you know, provides the vision, the, you know, we talk about sustainability. It's a really perfect combination, isn't it? Because it's someone who is giving you that certainty about your present, about your future, about your day to day, from really small to big things. And I know I covered a lot here, just kind of like to your point and to Cardullo's point.
And I mean, Daria,
well,
you may corroborate this with your own professional environment, but in our academic studies, we see if people leave or change jobs, it's mainly because the direct relationship with their manager. And so I think that's also an important part. How do you actually make people stay? How do you make people grow beyond having, you know, a responsible setting of mission and vision? I think it's also the more personal relationship. Mm-hmm. If it's a positive relationship, people also eventually go the extra mile. They face easier some difficulties. And I think this is maybe not necessarily always looked at, because at least to my knowledge, not many companies do exit interviews.
Yeah.
You do a lot of recruitment, but you do not necessarily know why people necessarily leave. And I think the responsibility aspect may eventually add to the attractiveness of a company. But I think the first is the relationship with the manager.
No, 100%. I agree. And we actually saw, you know, some people who would leave for better compensation saying, you know what, I love all of you. I love my manager, but just the compensation. But then they came back because something, it really confirms mm-hmm. your point, doesn't it? And from my side, in terms of like just leadership, you know, versus management and the comparison, what I see and what I agree with as well is really making sure that you hear your people, you know, like, because what does make a great leader and a great manager? In my experience right now, it's really making sure that you provide the platform to answer any questions they have. Going back to my previous point about so much change happening, people don't want any more flux. They just, and sometimes even, you know, in my practice, I see that you as a leader are so busy and you're thinking about those big things and stuff. And then all of a sudden you find out that your people are upset and you're like, but why? And they had this question about an extra holiday day, end of year. And you're like, what? What do you mean? Like, for you, it's not something that you may be thinking because it's so detailed, right? But for them, it's important. And if you all of a sudden have them have a collection of those unanswered small questions, they don't feel heard. So I think, you know, from my perspective, in terms of how to keep the people and how to be a good leader, is really have the open door policy, no matter what your position in the company, to arrange those platforms when everyone can come together, ask whatever question, they might have. And I think it's really important to have people stay to reduce churn.
I mean, it strikes me we're setting up quite a challenging role, which is fine for people, but it's, you know, the need to be both that forward-facing visionary individual and keep your eye on the day-to-day and those relationships and those responses is critical, and probably at the in the current environment ever so more critical, because we are still dealing with post-pandemic environment and the dynamics that's changed, or the way that's changed the dynamics of the kind of the workplace. So how do we ensure that leaders get the support that they need?
I was smiling when Daria was mentioning this extra holiday towards the end of the year. So I think that gives a resource for everybody as well. So maybe that is part of, you know, also sustaining your leaders. But I think what is also important is that you have certain rules in place in companies for accredited flexibility. Mm-hmm. So if you know that people work hard at one point in time, you don't add more workload, even if they eventually have finished. You give them some periods where they also can, you know, sort things out, think and breathe. And since we have post-COVID now, obligatory all modern technology also to work more remotely, to have more flexibility. I think I don't know any of my young graduates who will go for a job that does not offer those flexibility, for instance, to work remotely, to work from home at least certain days. I think you're no longer attractive as an employer. But the same flexibility and structure also is valid for all levels in the company. So also your leaders should have this time, you know, to breathe, to actually think about themselves, try to be clear about their own work-life balance, to also sustain their energy, to continue to lead by example. I think that's very important, that also leaders apply those more humane and more flexible structures to themselves. I think that's an important part.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. What roles do your organisations take in terms of kind of trying to kind of promote and respond, promote and develop responsible management, responsible kind of leadership now? That's a great example, Cordial. I'm sure there's lots more you do educationally in that regard. But, you know, what are the kind of things that you do? The Spotlight's another great example, Daria.
Yeah, I think another good example is we do have quite a few people who do like charity. So if they have done something on their own accord, you know, we will ask them to share, which is great, right? Because it's linked to this greater cause and just, you know, contributing to the good of the world. But also what we started doing is for employee of the month or just the colleague of the month, you know, when you actually had someone who were recognized a bit more. We try to be fair because usually it's everyone worked really hard and you could choose everyone. But as a thank you, as a prize, if you may, we actually give them a certain amount of money that they can donate to a charity of their choice. So again, they choose the charity, and then the next month during the, so it's announced on a company call, and next month we again invite them and we ask them to talk about, you know, why they chose that charity a little bit. And usually it's like the most heartwarming stories when everyone's sitting there, like, because of course people would choose something that's probably related to, you know, their family, something that's close to their heart, and those kind of like human connections. It's almost like this extra good level that is, you know, really important for the culture, but also connected to you know, to I guess bettering the world in a way with the charity work. So yeah, that's another example.
And I can give you from the educational organization perspective, of course, like Bradford, we have at Toulouse Business School, of course, also a vision and a mission statement and certain values. And we have actually five core values in our education that actually should transcend all our activities for faculty, for staff, and also for students. Of course, we're always striving for excellence. We want to have openness in terms of open-mindedness and curiosity and tolerance. We also try to train them in agility and to also become an audacious, daring person. So to think out of the box, I think that's also very important. And the fifth value we try to instill in all our academic activity is also, of course, responsibility, which is closing actually our ring here, because I think responsibility is a very important part where you can put many, many different elements. So it goes far beyond the sustainable development goals. It also goes on this relationship with the other, being involved, for instance, and you mentioned charity, Daria. We have, for instance, student projects in our first year in our masters. They have to realize community project in any area they choose in a small group, and that goes from fundraising to realizing the project. So that can be helping in a homeless shelter, helping in a retirement home, or also go international, which is actually bringing some activity on a site that our students, who are very often more moving in more privileged surroundings, are not necessarily exposed to on a daily basis. But we want them to take that into account. And I think this volunteer work is a very important part as well of, I would say, the work-life balance of many individuals. And I think it's absolutely important that companies then support that. And I see many companies supporting that, that you give some time to the community as well, which makes probably the world a better place.
Yeah, and I think companies have to think of, like, what are we giving people that is not the, you know, just the base, the salary and the place to come to every day. That maybe differentiates us, right? Just like you were saying about the work-life balance. It's almost like a must now when you're interviewing. What is more? And again, the generation right now, they are very aware of the climate change, of sustainability. So they do want to see those things mentioned in core values. When they are researching the company, they do want to see that they have a, you know, 2035 goal to reduce whatever they are committing to. But again, it's something that they are thinking about, and it's there, and it's written, it's visible, and this is what people are looking for. So it's really tough for companies, I would say. It's not just about the profits, it's about the, you know, people that they bring.
That's part of the responsibility argument, I guess, again, isn't it? It's not just about, you know, the doing the right thing, but if you want to be mechanistic about it, it's an expectation that increasingly all of our stakeholders, our customers, our employees, everybody expects of us.
Yeah. And I think you have a little paradox here, you know, time is money in business. Mm-hmm. And since we addressed more midterm and long-term orientations, it's probably better in the short term to have some breathing moments and reflection moments in order to ensure that for the long haul, you are making it also as an individual. And I think all this talk about work-life balance, even if you don't see the effect, because short term, a manager may miss out on some contribution, but that ensures a midterm and long-term contribution of employees who keep their health and who keep their perennial activity level for the company. And I would say this paradox that time is money and we go far more often for the short-term vision is probably the trade-off and the danger we have. If you don't have managers and leaders who recognize that, yes, for ensuring this midterm and long-term performance, I also need to accept that my people can take some moments off, have a more flexible work schedule, have some, you know, activities that go on different areas than only work, work, work. I think the overall counting is rather positive, but if you go only for in a short-term perspective, you cannot see it and you don't measure it as such. So I think this idea as well to work different, work smarter, not harder, mm-hmm. is a very important part, which also motivates this great resignation movement, because people just had time to think. They were forced to think about their family, their well-being during lockdown and confinement. Mm-hmm. And they finally, I think, had for the first time for many the chance really to obligatory reflect on those things and started actually to cherish things that were never on the agenda before and never on corporate agenda as well.
No, it's so true. And I really like the point that you made about the, you know, the work-life balance, and it's not about the hours you complete, right? And it creates this, it creates loyalty, I think. When someone trusts you, I think it's on very psychological level, right? Mm-hmm. Like, well, almost like a parent-child relationship, right? So if you create the loyalty when someone actually wants to do good and they also know that you look after them, this is where they want to stay and they really want to give good results. And I think I actually was quite lucky probably with one of my first jobs immediately. One of the values that they, you know, they were portraying and were very proud about was disciplined freedom. So they were always saying that, you know, we're not about checking, kind of like, you know, that you came to work at this hour and left at this hour. It's kind of like, we want, you know what you need to do, and we want you to do well, and as long as the result is there. And it was quite, you know, early on. And I think, again, just coming back, that probably I was lucky to experience that firsthand, to understand the value, not in the post-pandemic world, but in the world when everyone was kind of like the strict hours and come into the office culture.
And what I actually have observed as well, like you said, Daria, was loyalty and trust, that if you give people the freedom and you trust them, mm-hmm. you don't need to control them necessarily, yeah. if the objectives are clear. And I think mm-hmm. that also changed, because we all have been forced to let go during the pandemic. Because you could not check on people all the time. And I think I personally can only say, and also my staff surroundings, I was pleasantly surprised, because people actually are always willing to go the extra mile to complete.
Yeah.
But they can choose the moment they do. They can still take some time to take their children to school or from yeah. school, and eventually log in later in the evening that they would have never done in the workplace.
Yes.
So I think there are also, the flexibility has two sides. It's not only, you know, about doing the same work in a different scattered time frame, but I at least see a greater motivation of people if you give them that trust. Yeah. To perform.
We saw that it's a powerful point. We saw that with the research that we did with SMEs during COVID, and did some focus groups longitudinally over the peak COVID sort of 18-month, 2-year period. And one of the things that comes out of that narrative is, very early on in that, people were really nervous about homeworking and the flexibility, and will be people be working, and
yes.
and we know they've got lots of distractions because they've got kids mm-hmm. at home, because schools are shut. And actually the confidence that yeah. came from that, when people saying, well, actually we seem to be people being much more productive, and those people that are still in the workplace, that's another dynamic, mm-hmm. are kind of highly engaged as well. I mention it as well because our particular focus is on SMEs. So I want to yeah. kind of bring it back to that particular challenge. I guess, yeah, we've talked about in very general terms. I suspect a lot of those principles don't change. But what are the things that might change, you know, when the size of a firm changes from your perspective? Is it easier or harder to do these things that we've been talking about?
Well, I perceive if you have people who like some responsibility and have an entrepreneurial mindset, the size of the company is not a big issue in actually motivating them. On the other hand, I would say you have more activities going on in a small firm because you don't have, you know, this big department mm-hmm. and high specialization of the individuals. So I would say you probably have to call for this more entrepreneurial spirit to be more versatile and more flexible as well, where you put your effort in. I think that's probably an issue that all already goes with selection. I mean, if people work for smaller companies, generally speaking, they are very often themselves quite minded, you know, entrepreneurs, since they know that at any point in time they do not have the big experts somewhere in headquarters they can rely on. because they have to figure it out for themselves. So I would say it's also an issue of a mindset. I don't see that there is any difference in performance, but it's more a mindset issue for me, as I have observed.
Mm. And to add to that, because Dave, you mentioned like what kind of happens when the organization size changes, right? I think one of the dangerous points here is actually making sure that especially your senior leadership team, that they are ready to move, right? Because quite often they enjoy it so much being that entrepreneur, being in control, being able to, you know, part of the smaller team. There's so many elements. But again, it's more of kind of like your smaller world. And when it starts changing, I guess I'm speaking from experience that I know that some people, they do. Because again, no one's kind of preparing them early enough that now it will be, this decision won't be with you because there's a department that, let's say, is finance, and it will be a global decision to kind of like a bigger, and they're like, but it doesn't make sense for me. And they're so used to this kind of like smaller world. So this one is a really, really kind of like touchy subject in a way, and something that really needs to be controlled almost and project managed, I would say.
Yeah, it does seem to the experience that a lot of firms grow without thinking about this. One of the programs we're running at the moment is the Help to Grow Management Program, government funded support for SMEs to improve growth and productivity. And it's actually one of the bits on that I teach. We talk about organizational design. And for some of the businesses, the fact that they might actually consciously think about structure and systems and how they're going to evolve the business, you know, especially when they're just getting to that tipping point in complexity terms where, they're outside that 10 times 10 span of control, that actually, you know, is quite revelationary to say, well, actually, no, we need to be a bit more structured in the way we do things to support the things that we need to do well continuing in the future. And that's quite a difficult dynamic and a hump to get over almost as a business in terms of your development.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I think in addition, to come back to leadership, if the leadership team is, let's say, frustrated about all this change and stuff, what's happening to, you know, other people who need so much support from the senior leadership team who themselves are not ready, right? So it's just so many layers, so many elements to it. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And I think that as it reminds me of another aspect, the loneliness of the business owner as well. Because, I mean, Daria, you mentioned leadership team, but very often the team is very small or sometimes not even existing at that level. So I would think that the business owners of small businesses also have to think about, to escape this trap, to be alone at the top, to also try to get some outside coaching, some people with whom they can share their considerations, since they cannot rely on the larger team that you may find, of course, in larger corporations. So I would say that this loneliness of the business owner also has to be addressed. And as a leader, he or she also should anticipate that it will be quite lonely at the top, but try to find contacts and support that does not necessarily have to be the family support, because very often, you know, the business owner brings all back to his private life and the family life. But I mean, myself, actually, as an academic, completely out of my normal context, I'm actually advising some business owners. We just sit down once every 2 months in a cafe and talk about issues. I have no interest in the company at all. There is no financial link or whatever. And we just talk, where they talk about, you know, what will be next, what is the next issue for my growth, can I talk again to my banker, what will be the future. And I think the loneliness also is an issue that a lot of small and medium-sized businesses do not necessarily address, and maybe the leaders as well do not necessarily sufficiently anticipate. I think they should seek advice also by people who are not maybe in the area, just actually to change their ideas and to stimulate more that thinking out of the box.
That's a great bit of practical advice, I think, for leaders, that you need that sounding board, that trusted peer, that somebody that you can go to and they'll help you work through those issues, and they don't have that vested interest, so they're coming at it with a kind of clean slate. It's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you both. I've got one final question, which is a bit of a shift of tone. People that have heard the previous podcast will be expecting me to ask this one. Yeah. But the idea is that we're asking all of our contributors this over the series. So The final question is this: who's your management hero? Yeah, that can be somebody personal or professional, somebody who's inspired or influenced you in your own career. So, Daria, shall I come to you first?
that's a good question. I actually would think of one of my previous managers who was quite high up, definitely one of the leaders of the senior leadership team. And if you ask me like why, I think it was that personable approach and the fact that she always felt that they are looking after you. So, you know, when I talk about this flux, this change, something that you just don't know what happens, just knowing that there is this constant, that there is that certainty, that no matter what happens, you just have this solid person that you, it's not even about you, just kind of like for the company, of course, for yourself, for your team, for the organization, that you can come to them and you just fully trust in their judgment, that they will be fair, that they will make the right decision. But also the fact that they are approachable, you know, coming back to the types of leaders, creating that open door culture and making sure that people will want to stay because they want to belong to, you know, to that and be part of that.
Well, for me, as well, from my personal and professional side, is also somebody in my organization who now already has retired, was the former associate dean of our international relations. So he knew Bradford very well. He also the first broker of our relationship between Bradford and Toulouse Business School. And he was the first non-French in a French institution as well. Mm-hmm. So he is actually from Scotland. William McNulty is from Scotland. And as a Scot in the French surroundings, I think he has a complete different way of thinking. And I was number two of the non-French person in Toulouse Business School among the first non-French faculty members. And I think to see how, you know, you can break into a very standardized mold and make people thinking out of the box was for me quite inspiring, knowing that you always will be sidelined because you are a minority. Mm-hmm. But this person actually showed me as well the way, you know, to always hold on, even to dare to be a little different, but still, you know, respect some fundamentals of my institution, not to get crushed or not to get sidelined completely. Because I think if you are diverse and different, you have more difficulty. And I think since I'm in international management, I always try to motivate all our students to be curious, to have an open mindset and to go into the world. You have to be more daring, I would say, if you go international, because you actually have to challenge your everyday routine, because in new places, your own references are no longer working. And I think that was for me the first example. And he also acted like a mentor for me, believing in me, even if I was not accustomed to the traditional French way of doing, that we actually brokered our way through and developed a truly more international reach for our school. And if I should give a business person that is more famous and known than, I mean, a personal colleague, a former colleague of mine, is certainly maybe Carlos Ghosn. He was a very charismatic but also very personal leader, which I still see as valid leadership qualities today.
That's been brilliant. Thank you very much, both of you. Really, really enjoyed the conversation. Some kind of great insights there. If people wanted to get in touch with you, how could they find you? Daria?
So LinkedIn, I would say, is the best way for me.
Brilliant. Thank you. And Cordula?
For me, it's the same. You will find me under Z Barzantni or Cordula Barzantni on LinkedIn as well. And I have my email contact as well on LinkedIn. As an academic, you always find me anywhere with my name.
Brilliant. Thank you both. Likewise, yeah, find me on LinkedIn. Find me on the School of Management webpages easily enough. If you're following us on social media, it's at Dave P. Spicer, or for the school account, it's at Brad Management. If you've got any questions about the podcast or the things that we do on business and community engagement generally, please email us at BACE, Business and Community Engagement, BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you very much, both. If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourself. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.